to respond to that. At any point in that discussion, a question of difficult degree was also asked. And at the end of that, we will not be able to answer any questions that you have to well, process and follow, etc. When you speak, just please make sure that you click the button on top of the microphone, or you can leave it on if you'd like. I'm now going to hand over to Nicola Barnes.
Can you please tell us what is your understanding on the role of the Children's Commission?
So, in terms of the Act, my understanding is to be assisting the Western Cape government to protect and promote the interests of children in the Western Cape. And the Act is broken down various areas of duty: monitoring, investigating, research, and education, and involving the voice of the child. The Act also speaks to building collaborative relationships with the stakeholders in the province. And the Act also gives the Children's Commissioner some power to subpoena, to investigate, to actually hold kind of hearings and have people be subpoenaed to attend those. I find it quite interesting that the Act has an offences clause, which makes it an offence not to respond to a subpoena. And also gives the Commissioner the power to accompany police to search and seize, which I also find quite interesting. So seems to be a very, very broad mandate, but it seems that the Act has been well thought out, and almost as I read through the Act and examined it, it was almost like the Act sort of started with monitoring, and I sort of put next to that, how are we doing? And then the next section was investigating, and I put next to that, what are the problems? And then the research, and I put next to that, digging deeper, to better understand the child's conditions. And lobbying for legislation, which is kind of quite interesting. And lobbying for practice change and involving public participation, which is something I think is very important. And then also holding stakeholders accountable. So we know we have a constitution to which we are all beholden, and that we need to enact the provisions of the Constitution in terms of that the best interests of the children are paramount in every matter pertaining to the child, which is a very wide power that is given to any stakeholder that's involved with caring for children or looking after the interests of children. So that kind of sums my understanding of the role of the Commissioner.
How do you envisage the role of working with make sure that the rights of children are protected?
So I think if the Commissioner follows the processes that are stipulated in the Act, although having said that, there's a lot of scope for development of this. So I think the Commissioner, I think the first task would be that fact-finding task, finding out exactly who is who, what are they doing, knowing what the different acts say, sorry, the Schools Act, the Constitution, the Children's Act, the Child Justice Act, the different legislation, and then finding out from the heads of each of those what is going on currently, what do they understand some of the problems and challenges are, and just getting a picture, first getting a picture. And then I think the thing about investigating, I think that's quite important, to possibly go down to grassroots and talk to people in communities, to community workers, to the NGOs, to the people who are at the coalface, and find out what are the issues, and then bring that back to the heads of the different departments and grassroots and say, this is some of the things that we found, and some of the suggestions that we think need to happen, and then collaborate around finding solutions. So I really believe, and it's something I have practiced in my own course and when I was a prosecutor, in a public-private partnership sort of collaboration where the private sector and the government sector collaborate together. Because very often the government sector, of course, the laws that are governing them, they don't always have the resources. And sometimes the private sector can come to the party and top up, as it were, in terms of resources. So that's just, it's a bit vague, my answer, but that's kind of how I think I would start.
Thank you. Ma'am, how do you communicate the role of the Children's Commissioner to the people of the Western Cape and to the everyday life?
I think that I can't like the term extra layer. I think that the Children's Commissioner is there to... I think there's two things that I think. The one is oversight in terms of how the government departments who have been tasked with delivering. But sometimes they are so focused they can't see the wood for the trees. So the commissioners kind of zoom out and see the bigger picture and then can hold these different departments to account around some of the constitutional imperatives. As well as, I think, I would like to believe, assist the different stakeholders and government departments to collaborate so the left hand knows what the right hand is doing. So that I would like to see the commissioner build relationships between everybody and anybody who's interested in the rights of children and find out so we don't duplicate, so we don't reinvent the wheel. But we strengthen the arm of someone who's been X rather than recreate another X. But just say, okay, let's find out who's doing X and let's see what support they need, what resources they need, what encouragement they need. So that's the kind of thing that I would like to communicate.
Our question is, what value does the previous job experience add to the role of the Children's Commissioner?
Okay. So having worked in the child justice court as a prosecutor, I became acutely aware of a small issue, it's not a small issue, it's a big issue, but it's one of the many issues, and that was that the children who had dropped out of school got involved in crime, and there was a decent correlation between those two. I was in a position to collaborate for example, the Justice Forum or the Child Justice Forum with the Department of Justice, with the NPA. So I really have some relationships in some of those areas, and I have an understanding of, for example, how the child sector works. Then as a magistrate and a children's citizen, and I'm supposed to add the maintenance board, which for me is directly, it's directly impacts children. Even though children never really come to the maintenance is 99.9% of the time about a child needing food reinforcement, food feeds, and bread on the table. And again, that has given me insights both in the children's court, but let me go first to the children's court. In the children's court, the magistrate has quite a lot of power in terms of the Children's Act and does work collaboratively with the Department of Social Development and with the Department of Education, certainly in my court, and with the Department of Health. Requiring accountability and enforceability of the rights of children. But the limitation in the children's court is the magistrate can only address the work of the child that is directly before the court. So the magistrate has no power to go, so if you're struggling in that school, I think we need to look what's going on in that school. The magistrate can only go, so if you're struggling in that school, we need to make sure that school delivers to you this one child. So there has been the limitation. So when I read the act, I think to myself, this is kind of what I do every day, but on a micro level, on a case-by-case example. The commissioner will be required to do similar work on a macro level and have more power to, can I use the word interfere? You know, sort of stick your nose in everywhere. Whereas a magistrate can only stick your nose in as it pertains to the one child that's in front of you.
Can I add in your understanding, which government departments are tasked with delivering on the rights of children, and how will you engage in departments when
So I think it's a very interesting question because service delivery impacts all of us, including children. But specifically for children is education, health. So the Western Cape Education Department, the Western Cape Home affairs is a big one. Home affairs is like the front door. I cannot tell you how many children I see who are refused access to school because they don't have and I can't tell you what the struggle it is to get a child who doesn't have a birth certificate, a birth certificate. So the Department of Justice is also one of the stakeholders. But the Department of Justice role is confined to issues like child protection and the sexual offences courts. Although, and then the judiciary has an important role to play because of the power that the Children's Act confers upon the magistrates to call orders of state to account for non-delivery. How would I engage with them? I would like to meet with the heads of the department and I'd like to say before, find out from their perspective what their responsibilities are and how well they are delivering on those and where they think they are not delivering and why. And then talk about possible solutions to the what is not being delivered. So that would be engaging with the heads of the different departments.
Mr. Keller, how will you find out at the grassroots level which children are the most vulnerable and in need of the intervention on their behalf?
Yes, that's an extremely important question. So at the moment, I see those children almost every day. But I only see the ones that have come to the attention of either the school teacher or the Department of Social Services or a police officer. So every day I am working with children who I feel are on the margin of the marginalized. They are on the extreme margin. How would I identify those children? I think we desperately need the community to come on board. We need what I heard Shoni Sekiewicz once called the APAC funding. We need the schools to come on board. And I think within the community, I think we need to have island members in the community in some kind of way for people in the communities to feel they have a voice. So I love that children can approach the commissioner directly. So there are these stipulations around how you can approach the commissioner. You have to put fill out a form and you have to put your details, except if you're a child. And so I was thinking a bit about that. How would we make the commissioner accessible to children? How would we make the office accessible to children? And I have some ideas, but that could be something that we need to elaborate about. And I think that's an idea. Something, some kind of people that are stationed in schools or that really visit schools to talk to children in the playground, maybe, not in the classroom. I don't know. So those are some of my thoughts and ideas around it. And I think we can't do this with paid professionals alone. We have to use people in the community who are volunteering already, because I know a lot of communities have community workers who volunteer and work and know they've got their finger on the pulse of what's going on in the community, to have regular meetings with those kinds of people. So those are some of my thoughts. They're not fully the way to think, but I'm very conscious, and also with my training in historical practices, which teaches that we need to give people voices and choice. And we need to empower people with the leadership model that is high in control but high in support. And so I would try to use some of the restorative practice models of leadership in matters of commission to try and listen, hear, give people space to communicate what they want to say to the commissioner.
Thank you. What steps will you take when you find that a child or a community of children are being deprived of their constitutional rights and to assert what different government departments are doing about it?
Okay, so I think I would first want to understand exactly from the children's perspective what the issues are. So if the rights that have been deprived of, for example, education, what have the parents done? Which schools have they approached? Which people in the department have they approached? So almost like a gathering the information from the children themselves and from the parents and maybe other community workers. And then taking that information connecting it to the resident departments to say, this is the narrative in this community about this particular school or clinic or home affairs office that keeps turning you away and getting you here, but you're getting ready to do, running in circles of getting nobody. Can you please tell us what's going on? You need to know this is a constitutional right. It is your mandate to deliver. The story is that you're not delivering. Can we hear from you if that is true and if so, why? And then try and talk about how can we resolve it? What is the next step to take to resolve the issue? So some of my perceptions as a magistrate are that sometimes government departments react. So if something gets into the press, all of a sudden their service delivery opens. But if it's not in the press, if it's just, for example, I had a woman in my court today who hasn't had an foster care grant since 2018. And I was devastated to hear that. And I wasn't satisfied with the social worker's explanation. So I took some steps to make sure, and I said to the woman, the social worker has been ordered to do ABC, but if she hasn't done it by this date, you must come directly back to me and tell me yourself. I think it's a both thing. It's both requiring governments to deliver and holding them accountable, but it's also giving people the right to sidestep all the bureaucracy sometimes and just go straight to somebody who will listen and will act on their behalf.
Thank you, Chairman. Are you aware of the dire shortage of child care centres for the last year in the Western Cape? And what would you do to make more child care centres available for children to replace it?
I am acutely, painfully, frustratingly aware of this massive problem because I have women sitting in front of me crying and saying, Mrs. McKellar, I'm going to be the next day in fact. Please, I'm going to take my child. And the response I get is, no space, no space, no space. What can I do to address it? Very good question. I wish I could wave a magic wand because that doesn't exist. I think that there are some states that are working really well, from my perception and from my experience. For example, the RAW program that Glenn Ogo and Liz and I do run. I think a lot of children there with a lot of success. I wish that that type of program could be duplicated in other CYCCs. Ottawa CYCC, for example, most young boys that go there love to meet there. Very recently we've had a few complaints, but only very recently. So I would go to the ones that are working and try and work out why are they successful? What are they doing here that's working? And then try to lobby for funding, even if it means we have to lobby, I don't know, overseas or wherever, to say, this is a model that we can point to that is effective. Here are some of the stories of the different children that have been through these programs, whose lives have been transformed. And seriously, some of the children come back. Their faces are, they're like different people. We need more of these in the Western Cape because these are the ones that are working. So that's one thought.
Okay, my next question is, what do you understand or know about child trafficking in the Western Cape? Where mothers are making their children to the shoplifting syndicate. How will you assist these children that are arrested and others that are not prosecuted?
I think that the NPA and the South African police have to be pulled up around that issue. The lack of prosecution of the mothers is, in fact, I don't even know if this is statistically prosecuted, but I think under correction it may not be. So it's a multi-age problem. And I think the first thing that has to happen is that the children have to be released out of as a matter of urgency. And then the second thing that has to happen is that and that she thought that was okay to be. So while decent prosecution would be good, I always believe in a restorative justice model, if possible. But let me just say, as an aside, restorative justice is not a soft option unless it's properly implemented. I don't think it's been properly implemented in South Africa. I think defense lawyers try to use it as a get-out-of-jail-free quick card. But when it is properly implemented, the offender is held accountable, and the victim has the opportunity to ask for the kind of redress for the harm that they need. In this case, it would be a bit difficult because the victim is the child. But I would like to see women who've done something like that not only punished, but rehabilitated. Because something I'm acutely aware of is that a family relationship is not easily, you can't discard a family relationship. So that child will always probably have a loyalty to their mom. They might feel like conflicted about their mom getting into trouble with something they did. So I would hope that something like that could be dealt with really with kid gloves, very gently, very sensitively, and with a view to hopefully try and restore the relationship in the family, restore the family to some kind of semblance of normality and have some of the functionality addressed. So it's a difficult, I don't know if I actually answered your question, it's a difficult one, I must say. It's not easy to answer.
There's been lots of media reports about shortages of resources and physical issues at the family violence and sexual offences unit of the Zambian police. And there's been specific issues faced in the Department of Justice around starting to get cases where the DNA sample goes missing, where sexual reports, sexual abuse cases are not being seen through.
That could be very challenging and interesting. I would love to see a dedicated forensic lab. I really think that, as far as I know from the criminal justice system, the forensic laboratories are groaning under the load. I think possibly if we could take away some of the, you know, that they send a lot of their research on testing drugs to determine what the drugs are. I'm not sure that that's a very productive use of their time. Because that's to prosecute a drug addict, and I don't know that prosecuting drug addicts is very effective. So if they could be encouraged, if the NPA and the criminal justice system could be encouraged to address the drug issues other than prosecuting, I'm not talking about the leaders, I'm talking about the addicts. And then free up the labs to say, actually the forensic labs should give maybe 80% of their resources to this particular kind of case, and 20% of their resources to that kind of case. So that the cases that have to wait for the queue are the ones that involve, for example, provision of one packet of pips, rather than a semen sample of a child who's been raped. So I would kind of want to collaborate with the criminal justice sector to say, can we relook at how we're using the existing resources to analyze DNA samples for all cases?
There's a lack of space on the counseling of these children. Their child lying in bed lying in 3 months waiting list. How will we change this?
I think that, again, I would go into the communities to try and identify within communities who are the qualified, the retired, the non-working professionals, the retired teachers maybe, who could be doing that kind of work in the community, at the community centre, and say that might only be more applicable. For them to go and spend time with these people. So I think the short answer is I would try to, and in fact Childline, I think Childline is an operation. I know Lifeline is managed by volunteers. But I think that the volunteer army, if I can put it that way, could be mobilized in the communities to say, and spend some time in the local schools and faith-based communities, and communities that support the child in both cases to make these services available. Because one of the things I found interesting is that very often after holiday, when children have been on these school holiday camps and they're alone with holiday counselors, we often get children confiding in these holiday counselors about sexual abuse, and those cases are then picked up by states and reported on that. And sometimes it's abuse that's been going on for a long time, so there's something about maybe that environment or that context that the child felt the freedom to confide in that person. And then there are other innovations in the legal sector using technology like the Facebook bot that people can speak to anonymously about abuse, police advice, where to go to next. So that might not be entirely appropriate for children, but I think we could look at using technology that children are familiar with and are interacting with as well to try and see if there aren't apps or bots or Facebooks or something that children can access to say, or post an anonymous message and get an automated response where they can go and to report whatever's happening to them. So those are just some ideas.
Ms. McKenna, in your view, how can we make the education system more accessible to children with special needs?
That is such a difficult issue. In my experience, the inclusive education model does not appear to be working effectively for two reasons that I have encountered. The one is, and I had a case today on my desk, where I postponed a matter of a foster care child who I was concerned about the school marks and age of the child. And I have engaged with education around what they have, and they have the school-based support, and they have various systems that are meant to be working. And the principal of the school wrote back and said he doesn't believe the child needs school-based support because the child is doing fine. But in my opinion, the child is not doing fine. The child falls by grades, which means the child did not pass and that was not the first time. So what I'm trying to say is, number one, there's a problem with identifying these children for a child. I've been told that they can only go to school of skills when they're 14. And before the age of 14, there's only what is available for them is the school-based support and the special schools which are for profoundly mentally and intellectually challenged children only. So the children sort of caught in the middle really suffer. And I think it's exacerbating the problem of school dropout and children driving these teenage pregnancy, because the children who are frustrated and no self-esteem are the ones who start to act out. So I haven't answered your question because I don't know what the solution is. I know what the problem is. I think we do need more educational options for children. I think we need to think out of the box. I think we need to be creative. I think we need to think about what would be apprenticeship for the older teenage children who don't have to compulsory be in school. But I do think we do need more school of skills schools. And I think that as a commissioner, I would certainly, because I know I've got some insight into what education is trying to achieve, I would certainly want to collaborate with them around how they're doing and why it's not actually working and what can we do about that. And again, I use the idea of the retired teachers and the volunteers who are sitting around doing nothing, remaining mobilized. And so I always like to think of a wide intersectoral and private, public, civil sort of society solution where we collaborate to try and find a solution. That is a big, big problem, and it's a problem that causes me a lot of anguish, if I am put there.
liberal and cutting edge. What my experience is that the active part of the budget is nowhere to be seen. So we can't do, even in the Child Justice Act, which has very specific requirements, for example, before a child appears in court, it's meant to be a preliminary inquiry, meant to be this very nice informal roundtable talk. It's not happening. There doesn't seem to be the budget for it. In the Children's Court, for example, actually, in the Children's and Maintenance Court, when we hit this barrier with parenting plans and mediation, we made a plan and we now have a volunteer army to come every single Saturday morning and volunteer the services to mediate for parents who are in conflict to get that parenting plan in place and no charge to the party. It's a model that's working incredibly well. It's attracted the attention of the Deputy Minister of Justice, who's asked me to collaborate with him about rolling it out into the rest of the country. And again, it's my default setting that I see where the need is, and then I try and find within the private sector somebody out there, or some group of people out there who will go, I would love to be part of the solution. I'll give you 10% of my time, or I'll give you one Saturday a month, or I'll give you some portion of their professional skills to supplement. And somehow or other, I don't know that we will ever get all the money we need from government. I think we have to be creative and find ways to deliver, sometimes without money and sometimes with money from other sources.
Next question is, what experience do you have in setting up a large new established office in budgeting and also just managing staff?
A lot of experience in managing staff, because when I left the legal profession, I joined together with my husband and we managed a large staff of a church and a school. Budgeting is not my strong point. So I would definitely dedicate budgeting to someone else. I would keep my eye on it and make sure that everything is accounted for, but it's certainly not something that I would say I'm the person when it comes to budget. It's not something that I'm strong at. So, but managing large numbers of people, like the mediation team that I manage at the moment is 20 to 40 people, in our church context, we live in our congregation, up to 500, and see whether we need, we have a staff of between 30 and 40. So that is something I love working with people, and I love collaborating with people, the leading people. And I like to think that my leadership style is collaborative and authoritative, and not authoritarian or dictatorial.
A large part of what the Children's Commission is going to be doing is monitoring and reporting on the affected children in front. How would you go about raising awareness within the department, specifically in Western Cape, about the Children's Commission's monitoring and reporting function, and what monitoring and implementation tools do you intend to implement?
Okay, so the first part is how would I raise awareness within the department? So I think, again, by building relationships with the heads of departments and with people that are working under them and having regular feedback and discussions and meetings. I'm not sure how many meetings one may be allowed to have, or I don't think emails would really work so well, because I think people are so overwhelmed with digital correspondence, etc., that it would read everything that comes their way. But I think my model would be a relational model. So I would like to build good relationships with as many of the different departments as far as possible to keep them informed on the possibly on a regular meeting basis and on a basis. And then what is the second part of the question? Probably start with
supporting and hopefully developing and growing the education
the right of a child to education. So, for example, transport to schools I think is important. Safety at school is important. The climate is going to take the other things that the land arrays around children with special needs. Because I really believe that education is the stepping stone for them. And if they're not getting the education, the cycle of disadvantage doesn't get broken. And that's heartbreaking. So I think I would prioritize the education. And I think the schools are getting away with some things that are not lawful. So I think I would want to empower the parents to know what their rights are and what their children's rights are. And to be a little bit more, I would like to see parents be more assertive and more involved and more hands-on in the education process.
Thank you, Jefferson. How would you engage with NGOs and other relevant stakeholders to encourage more public-private partnerships?
So once again, I would first I have to identify who everyone is and what the different work is that they are involved in. And I would want to meet with the different heads and CEOs and founders and directors of the different NGOs so that they can know me, we can talk, they can have direct access to me, they can, and I can also have direct access to them. So I found it quite interesting that one of the powers that is given by the Act to the Commissioner is, for example, they can enter apprenticeships unannounced at school, because obviously at school we don't want to disrupt education, and I think that should be some of that. Not that you want to catch anyone out or you want to have a cultural fear or anything, but just so that there's like an understanding of I'm going to be around, I'm going to be in your organisation, I'm going to be in your area, I want to meet the people you're working with and see what you're doing, how we can support what you're doing. How the commission can support you, how the meeting can support you.
Thank you, Jeff. Michaela, can you just listen to me? What do we have to see in Venture? Between 2000 and the water teachers was between 1999 and 2007.
Yeah.
Okay. And between 2007 and 2010, there's nothing made of VGC. What were you doing then?
I was diagnosed with cancer in 2007, in December, and for a whole year I was in treatment. I had the operation, chemotherapy, the radiation, you know. So for 1 year I was in treatment for cancer, and then in 2009, I spent the whole of 2009 trying to get a job. And eventually the NPA joined me, and I started in October 2010. I was 46 years old. I started with the newly graduated LLB students. They all thought I was very odd because I had not quite as white but grey hair and I was at the age of their mother and I was like at the bottom of the run with them. So, yeah, so that's where I was and what I was
doing. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time and also for answering our questions. We'll have to answer any questions that you have.
The Act gives a lot of scope for development of programs, which also talks about hiring of staff and setting up. So I'm conscious that this is the eyes of UK South Africa now on this decision. What's going to happen? What's going to work? So I'm interested in what the plans are to empower the commissioner. What is the, I think the standard commissioner starts on the 1st of March or April or whatever. Who are the first people that will be put in place to help the commissioner with the task?
So what
terms of the public servant and more appointments in public made by the region. But what we've got today, we've got certain support available in that office to assist the commissioner in setting up.
Okay.
But the ultimate decision in terms of what the office looks like and how the office progresses and changes over time sits with you and the commissioner.
Okay. So is the commissioner satisfied to create and develop the role and function that he's going to be serving in. What is the Western Cape Parliament and the region account of how many people will be assigned to the commissioner, or will there be any person permanently assigned, or will it all be ad hoc? How will it work?
That again is a conversation that the commissioner has to initiate. What Parliament has done is Parliament was appropriate and approved about $5 million a year for the operation of the office.
Okay.
But we are going into process of now depending on what the finance is Wednesday, that will determine how the 5 o'clock impact is.
Okay.
So we have to exercise money for the setup of the office.
All right.
And there is a budget to operationalize the office going forward.
Okay. So do you envisage, okay, so I suppose I was just asking the same question and giving them the same answer, so I'll wait if I do. I'm just trying to imagine it, but maybe it's nice that it's so open and it's part of a creative process and a pioneering project, because I'm just saying something that I love to pioneer and something from nothing, which is what I seem to have done a few times.
The Act in terms of staff, it says that staff appointed must, so their performance and function must link to the sort of competencies or requirements of the Commission. So where the Commission has to, in terms of the powers and duties of the Commission. So the staff instruction, my reading of the Act is just that if we look at the role of what the Commission has to follow, so monitoring, investigating. But that's where it has been there for quite a while. And I think the first commissioner might have a specific way of doing things. The second commissioner might come along and change things up based on the experience.
Okay. Thank you for that. I don't think I have any other questions. So thank you for allowing me to ask questions and thank you for being here for this job.
Thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much for the work that you're doing in the children's court. I can't imagine it's an easy job, but we're very grateful.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Is that me, Dr. Jones?
Yes, please.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Members, you don't look like you want to go down, so you just stay We meet again tomorrow at 9 a.m. So that's 8:55. I'm in the chamber. It's 8:55. Can I ask that you hand your forms to Namonde? We had this discussion yesterday, and I'll ask you to keep them all together. Chamber, you're the only one around now.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm not sure. I have to sit down and I'm not going to go through this meeting because it's good and the energy of my score to allow me to give an informed decision tomorrow. Because I am in a way of a decision.
The rest of you, you are welcome to use it in one day. You can ask that in this
conference. After the continued view on this, I don't understand why you want to complete the form in one and see it and everything else and not this is on for influence. So now your scores will be influenced by your in your previous one. That's what I'm getting.
It will be influenced because it will be influenced because you pick up something the candidate says here, which is not in the CV, doesn't marry up to.
That's not how it should happen. CV is a there's a process, there's a mechanism, CV process and an interview process.
So
you see on the CV, but not what you get from the interview.
Yes.
I'm confused with the first one, because when you take the person into a new home and you make changes, for example, I can sit there, do nothing, and then go home and too fast. It's totally wrong.
I think how members spoke of candidates up to what you, how you interact with the person. So if you do it as a woman, just 5 seconds, that's kind of like one thing. If you sit there and you apply your mind, I don't have a problem with members making an informed decision in any other way. For me, I'm happy to keep mine and I'm happy to add it. But if the committee wants to make a specific decision, that should be right.
I want to try to actually. Because whatever we're doing here, we don't want any complication. This is a very sensitive matter that we need to get part right. Yeah, so if we must give the necessary attention and respect that we don't move forward, we don't want to do it. So if we are going to give it, we must give it. If we are going to take it, we take it. And we take the responsibility.
Marie started to say that last night some getting this, some getting this. Nothing's changed. Nothing I'm going to do that's not going to be different than yesterday. And we have done it in all the other boards, with the legal boards, with all the other boards I've served in this parliament the last 5 years. Whether you do this interview, you bring it back, you catch it in your laptop, you email it to somebody 3 days later. It really doesn't matter.
No, this one
should
follow it was my experience from the internet that in corporate environment, but if I'm in the research, then I don't
have to. Yeah, the last 5 years, the way I understand it is that it's once we tomorrow, if you're in the direction, so you're handling tomorrow, it's fine.
No, that's not the problem, but I don't understand the process is in the
process. So if you want to keep yours and keep it, I imagine it will be because I've done my mind here. Members, thank you very much for your time.